Once again, here's Mark. Rolled up to my Chevrolet.
I climbed out of the sun. Good morning, everybody. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, you're stuck with me, but I've got two people here in the studio that have lots of car experience. My daughter Andy and my son Alan are both here, and I think they've both got decades of car experience because they've been around the family businesses for 40 years. And today, Andy and Alan kind of control the entire operation because my wife and I are kind of semi-retired. So most of the time, well, if not all the time, you would deal with one of the two of them if even if you were going to call or whatever. But let me tell you about another good shop here in town, and that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. They've been rebuilding transmissions since 1968. Phil has been around earlier than that. Phil understands transmissions from the basic Fred Flintstone ones all the way to the new 8-speed electronic, then I shift it when I want to kind of transmissions. So if you have a transmission problem, the only shop in Phoenix that I recommend is Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th Street and Washington on the north side of the road. 40th Street and Washington. So what time did you get up this morning, big dog?
Oh, I was up early. For some reason now, with my old age, I'm like 5 o'clock. It's, I don't like it. You know, not one bit. But I usually can fit in a nap during the day. Yeah. Actually, I'm pretty positive I can.
Yeah, Andy, do you see him sleeping in his office?
No, not here, not at work.
Oh, okay. All righty. How about you, Andy?
I woke up a lot later this morning. waking up.
Yeah, you can tell by your voice. All right, well, we've already got a caller, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Michael, thanks for calling in early. How can we help you?
Good morning and Merry Christmas. As you know, this is the fourth day of the Christmas in the Catholic Church.
Yes.
A lady I know has an eye problem, and she wants to sell her nice 2007 Buick Lucerne with 88,000 miles on it. I don't have a computer, and I was wondering what would be a fair price for that.
You know, there's so many options to pick on that just get some help and go to KBB.com.
What year was it?
It was an 07. Lucerne. Could that be a Le Sabre?
No, it's probably a Lucerne.
Okay.
You know what the mileage is on it by chance?
88,000.
Oh, I'm sorry. You said that, yes.
Okay, we're looking that up for you right now.
Try to give you a rough idea.
07.
Buick Lucerne.
Lucerne, 88. Andy's really...
This is going to sound like a stupid question, but it's going to ask her, what color is it?
White.
White, okay.
That's a pretty popular color.
Yeah.
It's better than being pink or turquoise.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, there's a couple. Do you know if it has the 3.8 or the 4.6 by chance?
I think it's a six-cylinder car.
3.8.
Okay. We'll just kind of do the middle
standard of
the road. Go ahead, guys, and I'll look at this and let you know.
Okay, and what Kelley Blue Book's going to give you is three different prices. So it's going to give you low, medium, and high. And then that typically is going to be. Now, they're going to be described as... everybody knows that trade-in is probably the lowest price. And then they go from there. I think they go to private party.
Private party.
Private party. And then they go to trade-in, and then they go to retail.
No, I think trade-in is going to be your bottom one.
Okay.
Bottom one, and then... bottom one, and then you're going to go to private party, and then you go to retail, which is really not a good number at all. I don't know who's going to pay retail on it, but...
Okay. So this is private party excellent.
Excellent condition, okay.
Okay, so...
Original owner?
Yes.
Oh, wow, okay.
Okay, yeah, so it's showing private party excellent condition, is $3,500 to $5,300.
So it's giving you that range.
Yeah, so it's, the median's about $4,500, it says, so...
What do you know what she's asking for it?
No, I'm going to test drive it today, and she'll probably tell me the price.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the range. Now, under the best of conditions, she has all the maintenance records. And under the best conditions, if you do a query, a Carfax on it, it's never been wrecked. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, we move up from the very bottom for those two things.
Original owner, I think you move up for that. I think mileage, you move up for that.
I would definitely start at the high end.
Yeah,
if she's the original owner, has all the maintenance records, I would start at the higher end.
Being as how it's a cream puff, do you think I should still have it inspected?
It's always a good idea It's yeah.
Because even though it has the 88,000 miles, it's still 12 years old, almost 13 years old. So, you know, depending on what maintenance she has done or hasn't done, or it would, I think it's still a good idea.
I don't think you can hurt. I mean, if a prospective buyer calls you and says, I can email you over the inspection report. If the buyer was smart, they would take it to their own shop and have it done as well. But I don't think it would hurt.
Yeah, and I think, too, if it's been garaged, that's a couple extra points because it's been out of the weather and stuff like that. And we got to – I think we're going to all agree that it's probably not been drag raced unless the grandkids have come in once a year and used the car. So, yeah, I think we've given you enough information for you to do whatever you want. If you want to be fair, I think we've given you a range where you can make that happen.
Thanks for the great phone call.
Okay. Thank you very much, Michael. 602-508-0960. I want to read you a couple things from about our industry. And I tore these pages out of a magazine I get every month that talks to us independent guys. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, I'm going to read you the resume of one of the guys. Chris is the owner of an automatic of a training institute. He has 130 full-time associates that train and coach more than 1,500 shop owners every week to drive profits and dream homes to their families. Other full-time coaches have helped our members earn more than $1 billion in a return of their coaching investment. Okay? Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example of another guy who writes this down. He says, check your internal shop process to ensure profit isn't falling through the cracks. Now, all these magazines have everything to do with profit. Mm-hmm. Have everything to do with profit. So these are some of the things. You need to recommend transmission flushes every 50,000 miles. Got a comment on that?
I mean.
Yeah. No.
I think the owner's manual is what you should go by.
Sure. Yeah.
This is real self-serving. If we've got a synthetic transmission fluid in it, it's a 100,000-mile call. But this is real self-serving to just across the board go with 50,000 miles.
Well, I think that used to be, back in the day, some of those intervals used to be applicable, but each vehicle is so different now, and there's so many different variables that, I mean, it's hard to even – oil changes are hard to – you can't even say an oil change across the board what everyone should be doing because it depends on the oil, the vehicle, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, and I agree. This is based on 600 clients averaging 11,000 miles a year. Okay? So if you do transmission flushes every 50,000 miles and you have 600 clients averaging $1,100 a year, then he does the math and he says $12,966 less the annual lease cost of equipment, $2,000. So your additional net income, not gross, but net, is $10,926. So this is a guy that's telling you how to run your shop. And he's coming up with these mathematical formulas that if you do this, which is not really industry standards, mm-hmm. you really should. You bring up a good point, though. Oil. So I was talking to a bunch of guys this morning, and I was using my hands. Your hands are 6 inches apart. That's conventional oil. It actually represents not only the miles that the oil's good for, but the quality of the oil. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now we're going to move our hands 9 inches apart, and that's semi-synthetic. Mm-hmm. And we have a longer oil change interval. Conventional's 3. This is 5 to 7, somewhere around there. And also the quality of the oil improves. So you have a longer interval, and the quality of oil is better.
It's then also more expensive.
Thank you.
So as your hands get wider, and so does the cost get more, yeah.
Yeah. So what's a conventional oil change? Give me a range.
30 to 40.
Okay.
Or 40 to 50.
Yeah, and I mean, rarely do people even pour conventional anymore.
Okay. Semi-synthetic, 5-quart system, passenger car.
40 to 50.
Okay.
And 40 to 60, I was going to say. Yeah.
And full synthetic.
Is.
Oh, they can be. I would say they start at 60.
Yeah.
Start.
And I've seen them up to 100.
Oh, well, and diesels, I've seen diesels up to 200 and 250.
Yeah.
Depending.
But diesels are going to hold a lot more quarts of oil now than a passenger car.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So those are the things. And so if we were to trim everything to the short side and we were to go with 3,000 or 5,000 miles and we were going to go in the quality of the oil and all that kind of stuff, then we bring you in sooner. And that benefits us. So if we put oil in and we don't put a synthetic, what it calls for, it says right on the cap is 0.20 or whatever. If we don't follow those kinds of simple markers, we can make a whole lot more money.
Yeah, and we see a lot of times people buy new cars and they go back to the service facility and get free oil changes, and they do that for the first 5 oil changes, and then when they actually have to pay for an oil change, they have no idea that the cost is so high.
And you know what? If, taking that into consideration, 5 oil changes is 50,000 miles on a synthetic.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got oil changes throughout. But what's the chances of that call-in is going to be far less than 10,000 miles? That could be like 5,000 miles. That
yeah.
could be 7,000 miles or 8,000 miles, when in reality, synthetic on your new car should go 10.
Yeah.
Should go 10. So by moving the targets around, by moving the mileage of when you're due, and then the oil quality we put in your car, we can manipulate those oil changes. And it's easy to do, especially if you haven't read your owner's manual. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And I'll tell you now, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, our oil changes are priced with lots of work with the market that might be a 10-mile or 20-mile radius of us. So our oil changes are going to be somewhere in the middle of the range, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, because I know you said $60 to $100 on the synthetic. What are we?
Well, I mean, I think it just varies on how many quarts, quarts you have and what kind of vehicle, because some oil filters are more expensive on, others. So I think it really does vary.
Okay. But if we're if it's 60 to 100, are we pretty close within a dollar or two to 80, which is the middle of the range?
Yeah.
I saw a synthetic the other day. I saw a work order the other day that was 79 something or other.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's part of running a good shop has to do with...
Keep in mind, too, these $20 oil changes that you're seeing in the paper and stuff like that, I hope you understand. I hope people can see through those things and understand that that's a shopping list thing. They're going to come in and they're going to try to sell you underneath the sun because you are losing your butt at $20 a piece.
Yeah,
the shop is.
Yeah, there's
it's a difficult thing, but you're right. In the old days we called it RSO. Reoccurring sales opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we could get you in on a regular basis, then we had a shot to take and sell you stuff.
Right.
So the shorter the duration, the better we liked it.
Yeah.
602-508-0960. We'll be back. Yeah. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Andy Salem and Alan Salem. And all of us have been in the industry a very long time. For me, it's been 40 years, and I'm a master tech. And Andy and Alan have a good handle because ever since they were small, they also had the opportunity to be involved in the family business. Let me tell you about another really good shop in town. It's Kurt's Auto Repair at I-17 in Bell, northeast corner. Kurt and Jeff and Eric are all master technicians. Between the three of them, I would bet that they can fix 99.5% of the cars that come in if they can duplicate the problem. Obviously, you can't fix it if the problem's not in front of you. But they're really good at what they did. They're one of the Better Business Bureau Ethic Awards winners. They've opened in 1987. They do gas and diesel, and they do a good job. So if you're I-17 and Bell Road and you don't have a shop, may I suggest you stop by for an oil change. Russell, good morning.
Good morning.
How can I help you today?
Well, I had an interesting occurrence at the dealership. I have a 2015 BMW i3, and I've had it for maybe a year or so, and I thought I would check out the oil level on my range extender, which is a small little motorcycle engine in there that generates extra power for the batteries once the batteries run out.
Okay.
And I checked the oil, and it looked absolutely like it had just been put in the day before. So the dealership is after me you need to change the oil on this, on this thing because it's what they recommend for their maintenance. So I bought an electric car because I'm trying to be conscious of my environment. So I really don't want to change the oil if I don't have to change the oil. And they did the same thing with me on the brake fluid. They said, oh, the brake fluid needs to be changed as well, but they refused to give me any kind of proof that I had too much moisture, you know, in my system. What do you think about all that?
This is exactly what our industry talks about. I'm gonna take the oil issue. If you want, you can get an oil sample off the internet for $10. They send you a little bottle, you put some oil in it, you send it to them, and they give you a baseline. And let's just pretend the metal content is 0.1, okay? So you wait 1,000 miles, 2,000 miles, 5,000 miles later, and you send it in, and the metal content is 1.1. Or no, 0.1. Wow. No, 0.1. So if it's the same, we're not doing a whole lot. More than likely, this system is a closed system. So, and I bet it doesn't have an oil filter on it. So
it does.
Okay, so at that we don't have to worry about a whole bunch of solids. So the question to you is what kind of oil is in there? What's supposed to be in there?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure. Okay. I'm assuming it's a synthetic.
Okay, and if it is, if it's a 0-20 synthetic, if I were going to... Now, does this motor run all the time or not?
It hardly runs at all.
Okay.
So it just... It's basically when you run out of juice, or when you run out of your 80 miles of electric, then it kicks on and continues to charge batteries. But in the year and a half we've owned it, tapped into it for maybe a total of an hour.
Okay.
What does the owner's manual say?
Exactly. That's what I was going to ask.
You know, that's a wonderful question.
That's the Bible of your vehicle,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
there.
That's what I would go by, no matter, I mean...
And if you don't, if you're too lazy to look, or if you do look and you know that the dealership is BSing you, then just see, could you show me in my owner's manual where it says that I must have this changed after a year? Here's my owner's manual. Would you show me where it says that? And you'll see some serious dancing around.
That goes with all shops, though. I mean,
everybody, not just the dealership.
We got independents, we got dealerships, we got specialty shops, we have chain stores. We got all of that going on. But, if you've got an hour's worth of time on this oil, and you looked at the owner's manual, and it says it's not going to give you miles. It's not going to give you time. Or it might give you one, or it might even give you both, but it's going to give you a range.
And the fluid looks good. So,
yeah.
I mean.
Does it have a dipstick?
Yeah.
Yeah, he checked it.
Okay.
He said
it
looks
good. Dipstick. Yeah, and I it was funny. I went on YouTube and watched a video of a guy who changed the oil on it, and he did the same thing. He pulled it apart, and he was like, wow, this oil looks brand new, and it's just a backup generator. And so that's what kind of got my thinking, so I just followed his instructions and checked it all, and it looks good. So I'll go back and read the owner's manual and make sure that I understand exactly what the manufacturer said.
If you want to turn this whole thing around... And this is, you can do this either way, okay? But just for the purposes of your story, you've been told this. You call another dealership and you say, my shop is telling me that I need to change this oil at this interval, even though I have an hour's worth of time on it. What do you think? And it would be interesting to hear what you're told.
it's kind of
a backdoor way to figure out, because if we're piling on one another, this guy wants to sell it to you, but if he thinks the independent shop's doing it, then he's going to say no, and he's going to pile on the independent shop. And it works both ways. You can go from dealer to independent. Okay. Independent to dealer makes no difference.
And everyone's probably going to have maybe a different opinion, so that's, too, why the owner's manual would probably be a good idea. And the same for the brake flush. I know for us, typically we say do a brake flush when you need to do brakes. We don't typically do a brake flush if we're not doing brakes. I mean, that's rare in our situation.
Unless there's something really, it's filthy dirty, or it's got, I think it's 4%
of moisture.
Moisture.
There are equipment we can measure the moisture content, and that's the real trigger. Colors, obviously, if it looks like coffee or hot chocolate, that would be good. But here's the bad news. The bad news is we can't clean all the trash out of the calipers. So we can flush it for a week, and we're still going to end up with a tea-colored fluid at the end of a month. So the color's kind of bad, but you can see I've drawn the extremes out.
But they should also, if they're selling you that based off of your moisture content, content, they should be able to take you out into the shop and actually show you that test that they're performing in front of you, just to kind of instill that confidence that they're,
right, and I asked him for that, and he just went round and round with me. He says, well, no, this is what our engineers recommend.
Okay.
I'm like, so can you think to yourself and show me?
Yeah.
He's like, no, we don't do that. I'm like, okay, well, the car has regenerative brakes anyway, so it's like you let off the gas, the electric motors slow the car down, so you don't hardly use the brakes. So it's kind of the same situation.
Sure.
Well, here's the problem, too. You're talking to a service writer that is going to be a parrot from what's going on back there.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking to somebody who really doesn't have the skills to have this discussion with you, but they have asked the guys in the back, and the guys in the back have kind of briefed them on the square box that they want the service writers to live in. It's a pretty weak answer because the engineers want it, or our engineers say it. If it's the Bible's your owner's manual, like Andy said. So anyway, thank you very much, Russell. That's a good discussion right there. It's all the different parameters of our industry. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Alan here, he's my son. Andy's here, my daughter. And we've all been working. You guys got 25 years? We
He's
figured it out the other day.
23,
yeah. And you got 20?
Yeah.
Okay. So between the two of them, they're 43 years, and I've only got 40 years. So we've been around a little bit for a long time. We service lots of cars, and we service from Alfa Romeos to Mercury Zephyrs. So we have, and then we do big trucks, and we do motorhomes, and we do the ones that hold 20 quarts of oil and the ones that hold 5 or something like that. So we've been around the block, and it's easy for us to talk about at least some industry standards, and I've been able to be qualified in court as an industry standard. So there's few of us out there. We'll be right back right after. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem, Andy Salem, and Alan Salem at your service. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We have two callers. Actually, I have three, but a little business.
Whoa. Slow down.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry.
I was like, fast forward.
Okay.
If anyone caught any of that, let us know.
That's fine. Larry Harker's Autos at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Between Bob and his son-in-law, Jeremy, they have all the ASC certs, but here's what's important about Jeremy. He's passed every ASC test there is. He's one of two or three in the United States that's passed everything. School buses, big truck, paint and body, everything. So Jeremy's got skills I'm admitting I don't even come close to. Since 1967, Larry Harker's has been open. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto. They're centrally located, 38th Avenue and Indian School. So if you live in that area, I would try them. And if you've got a problem where the car barks only on Tuesday morning at 11 o'clock, then I would take it to Harker's because he's probably going to be able to track that down. All right, let's go to Nelson. Nelson, good morning.
Good morning. I have a 1994 Ranger pickup, 2.3 four-cylinder engine. The problem that I'm having is I can't get any heat out of my heater. Now, so far, I've replaced the thermostat. I even tried it running without the thermostat. I've replaced the water pump. I've replaced the heater core. I've replaced the solenoid that goes from the thermostat into – it's like a solenoid goes from the thermostat into the heater core. The radiator is approximately 2 years old. I had it to one of the shops that you have recommended. I've had it to the Ford garage. I also disconnected the little vacuum thing underneath the dash of the glove box and opened up the box so the air would go. It blows air, and the blower works fine. I just can't get any heat out of my heater.
Okay, well, I wouldn't have done all that. All I would have done is got a temperature gun from Harbor Freight and gunned the two heater hoses that are going into the heater core. That's where you have to start. If you got water going in and water going out, then you have something wrong underneath the dash because there's a door that gives you cold air and gives you hot air. So the blend door would be that. Checking vacuum at the blend door doesn't tell us it's opening and closing. So if you have one that's hot, one heater hose is hot, and one that's cold, then we've got something. And it's probably a heater control valve somewhere. And sometimes you just take that out and put a joint nipple in there, and all of a sudden you got heat, and you know that the heater control valve is bad, or the trigger for the heater control valve is bad, like a cable, like a vacuum-operated solenoid or something like that. Now, that that thing there is really old, and it could very well be that just a high-pressure shot of a garden hose might very well unclog something that's there. But this isn't a hard problem on a 1 to 10 scale. This is a 4 for one of the guys that works at the shop, any shop. Most of the senior guys would have that.
So, okay.
And for you to know that there's a problem, taking the thermostat out is the worst thing you could have done.
It's the opposite of what you want to
do.
Yeah.
So, and I hope you're putting a 195 in there, or at least what it calls for, because that has a lot to do to it, too. So if you take the metered flow out of the cooling system, then you're never going to warm up.
No, the 190, the thermostat, was a temporary deal. I was working over the Thanksgiving holiday, so that was just a temporary deal, because I had the vehicle tore apart, and you're trying to chase parts down, get back to the parts house, get back together. So that was just a temporary issue.
Yeah. The real question is, have you got hot air going or hot water going in and out? That's the real question. You got to start there. So you can grab them with both hands, but a temperature gun is going to give you a wider variation. So if there's a 30 degree between going in and going out, and you've got 30 going in and 10 coming out, then there's a problem. And the heater core could be plugged up. Sometimes we take a garden hose, hook it to the heater core, disconnect the two, and we gently apply water, and all of a sudden, we got a bunch of crap comes out, and it seems to be better.
He said he replaced that.
Yeah.
But...
yeah,
he's still got all the valving associated.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the best we can do, Nelson. Good luck to you. Good luck to you. All righty, JC, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, I have a 2012 Chevrolet Duramax.
Okay.
Recently got a engine code for number 5 glow plug.
Okay.
And I was wondering, is it harmful to do that because I have 75% left on the fuel filter?
No.
And I know you have to pull the wheel well out to do the filter, correct?
1 minute.
Sometimes. It makes it easier. You don't have to. It's not going to hurt anything. I've had customers drive with those things for years with glow plug codes on. I'm not too concerned about that. So if you want to kill two birds with one stone, that's fine.
That's what I was planning. I mean, I am your customer, so as soon as the fuel filter is ready, I'll bring her to you.
Yeah, okay. No problem at all.
And the glow plug only works on startup.
Right.
And we're going to trigger it off.
And sometimes they don't even come on, depending on how cold it is.
And then he's got an 8-cylinder. It's not like a 6-cylinder.
Right.
So he's only got one cylinder that may not participate till it starts running. And within certainly a minute, the glow plugs aren't important.
Mm-mm.
So it's up to you if you want to chase that down. Do you think you can pull the glow plug out of that?
I feel like I could.
Okay. Well, you might try this. Clear the code and swap it with some other cylinder. Pull two of them out, one on the driver's side, one on the passenger side. Swap the glow plugs and see what happens.
You certainly could do that to make sure it's that. 95% of the time, it's when you get one code, it is a glow plug. If you start getting multiple ones, then you start looking at glow plug modules. We had a Ford in here yesterday that had 4 glow plug codes, and someone had decided that they needed that fuse for something worse, so they just pulled the fuse out, not knowing what it was, and it was bank 1, 3, 5, and 7. So you know, we also do glow plug modules and those things, but it's not likely with just one code.
10-4.
Alrighty, gentlemen, I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you for calling. 10-40. We're gonna take another. We'll take more calls, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And I'm Mark Salem, Alan Salem, and Andy Salem here at your service. Four minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you'd like to join us and have a car question, you're welcome. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We have 4 lines that are open right now. Tom's got one. But real quick, I have a list of the best car repair shops in Phoenix that I believe to be the best list. It's been around for a very long time, since 1988. It changes. Some guys sell, and the new shop can't be on the list until they have years of proven good service. So Action Auto Repair's been on for a very long time. He's up at I-17 in Deer Valley on the northwest corner of that. Full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that does just about everything, and the stuff they're not good at, they'll tell you they're not good at. So Tom and his staff are well known for really good customer service, quality workmanship, a fast turnaround time, and having really great technicians. I knew Tom before he opened that shop. He opened it in 1983, and I knew him in the early 80s. So Tom's a good guy. I've known him a long time, and I'm not shy about sending you to him. Tom, good morning.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it very much.
You bet.
I have a 2013 Yukon XL. It has 104,000 miles on it. About 2 months ago, I started noticing a light load ignition knock. That went on for probably 4 or 5 days, and then the check engine light finally came on. I took it in. They said the MAF sensor tip had burned off. They replaced it, reset everything. I drove it 2 days. The light came back on. I drove for another week or so. The light went off. Now, what happens is, if I drive around town for a week, the light will not come on. Yesterday, I jumped on the freeway, drove about 15 miles, parked, got back in the truck, drove back down the freeway, and about 5 or 6 miles, the light popped on.
Okay.
And it's done this 4 or 5 times under that condition only, but then if I park the car overnight, the light's not on the next morning.
Okay, yeah. Okay. None of that makes any difference because we can answer the question after we fix it. So chasing that particular set of circumstances is just not in your best interest. We can answer the question after we fix the car.
Well, I think it's good information to know maybe that it's just coming on the freeway speeds and things like that. But there should be, if it's staying on for that amount of time, even though it's going off, there should still be a code set.
History code.
Yeah. Do you know what that code is by chance?
I do not.
Yeah.
That's going to be where we need to start.
Yeah, you need to start there.
What did he say that they replaced on it because the tip was bad?
MAP sensor, is that what you said?
Yes.
Is it the MAP or the mass airflow?
No.
Mass airflow.
You know, because see, they didn't have a MAP and a mass airflow. It's either going to be one
of
the
other. How does it break the tip off of the mass airflow?
God knows. But here's what you did do wrong. You didn't ask for your old part back because you can go back and say, you didn't fix it.
Well, that's if the code is related to that. It could be a whole nother code, a whole nother problem, and just a coincidence that it happened after that repair, too.
You're giving them the benefit of the doubt, and I understand that. But the fact of the matter is it appears, based on what Tom is saying, that they had a code, and they said this mass airflow sensor would fix it. And, of course, he obviously has the same code and the same circumstances.
Possibly.
And
I'll tell you, though, have you had any work done with the valve train on this thing yet? As far as the V-Line?
Oh, no. No, the truck runs perfectly.
Okay.
Perfectly.
What are you
for
thinking?
Yeah.
What are you thinking? Is this a camshaft one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it? It's a, what year
13.
Is it? A 13. Oh, I thought it was.
Okay.
Was...
Tell them a brief, what are we talking about?
We see a ton of these things, and I'm not saying none of your symptoms other than the tip and rattle that you were talking about match what I'm about to tell you, but we do a ton of lifters, camshafts, V-loam on these trucks. GM has had a problem since 2000 on the 4.8, the 5.3, and the 6.2 with their valve train. With the primarily it starts with the lifters, the displacement on demand. Lifters on these things go bad, and then they end up, depending on how long you let it go, wiping out the camshafts on these things. But we do a ton of these things. And that's, I was going to interrupt you before you even said anything and tell you I got the fix, but I'm glad I didn't because that wasn't, it's not, it doesn't sound like it's the same thing.
And the best, you, Tom, you have no idea what the truck looks like when we take the camshaft out of the front of that motor. The top is gone. The front is gone. The radiator's gone. The condenser's gone because the camshaft has to slide out the front. We have 10 Folger coffee cans full of bolts and stuff. And then we get inside. We got a camshaft that's been shedding metal. We got lifters that are all flattened out. Now, is the fix okay? Are we, have they done the appropriate?
No.
So we're not fixed.
No, it's 2019 and this started in 2007 and they haven't fixed the problem.
And they still have the problem.
They still have the problem.
So
we did one just a couple months ago, 2018.
We've seen, I mean, we've seen them. What mileage would you say we've seen in the lowest at?
I've seen at the lowest at about 60.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
And the average? Up to 150 or more.
Okay, and the symptom is going to be an engine miss, yes?
It misfire, you'll start to see an ABS light. It'll have a rough idle. You'll have a traction control or a traction control or an ABS light because the vehicle is misidentifying the misfire as a... it gets bad enough to where it misidentifies the misfire as a like an ABS sensor,
yeah.
like slipping,
yeah.
Like one of the tires. So, and you have that to look forward to.
Well, getting back to his original thing, I think he just needs to probably take it back to the shop, have them pull the code and kind of explain to them again, have them relook at the situation.
And you can do that in a nice way. I brought it in, gave you the symptoms, you diagnosed it as this, and I have the same symptoms. So can we start over, and I would think that you would do the diagnostics for nothing, because we already have, and then just protect yourself by just asking them for the old parts back. Because if you had that mass airflow sensor, this is a home run, buddy. Give it back to them and say, let's start over.
Yeah, and it's and I trust the guy that did the work. I mean, he's I've known him for 20-some years. I just thought that since this was so specific that around town for 2 weeks it won't come on, but only after a long freeway drive, turning it off, and then I have to drive again before it comes back on.
It being that specific makes
so
it tenfold hard to find. That doesn't make it easier to find. That makes it harder to find.
And it's really, you got the horse's bleeding out of his ear. It's fix the bleed out of the ear and don't chase the after effects. So it's not a good idea to start there. The good idea is go to the code. Look at the parameters, look at the specifications, see if you can drive it and duplicate it, all that kind of stuff. I think one of the big things I see is he's got an intermittent miss on it. And I think that's the important thing. We need a code that kind of aligns itself with that.
Yeah.
But anyway, good luck to you, Tom. And the relationship you have with your shop is a good one. But we all make mistakes.
Yeah.
We put the old parts back in the cars. And Andy, how often do we end up taking the part out and putting it back on the car? Once a month, two times a month, a year?
No, I would say, maybe once, twice would be a lot in a year period of time.
Okay. But see, the benefit there is we start off, like most shops, we start off with a credit on the part, and then we move on from there. Anyway, 602, I almost do my cell phone. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. We talked this afternoon or this morning when I'm sitting at the round table at Joe's. They call it a prayer meeting. There's a whole bunch of guys there, and we're talking about this kind of stuff, spark plugs and fuel.
If it's
and
a prayer meeting, I'm out. You don't want me there.
It's a Christian radio station.
I know. You can stay.
Me personally, I'm not against it. I'm for it. It's just me personally.
You have to understand,
it's like lightning bolts walking in there.
We tell our wives that we're going to a prayer meeting.
Oh, that's a code word.
Yes, it's a code word.
I like it. Okay, we have code words too.
And all I know,
I'm following you.
And we go there, and Joe puts our coffee, and then he puts something else in it. Then he puts some whipped cream or some kind of stuff on the top of it.
Oh.
And so then we talk about cars and our wives and our motorhomes. And then there we go to the barbecue place and have breakfast.
So that, I just had a serious moment here. So when my buddies are asking me to go to the ballet, they don't really mean the ballet. Holy cow, I had no idea.
You've been missing
out all
these years.
I have. The guys.
I said, I've never seen the ballet. Are you sure?
Have you gone to the ballet? Okay.
I'm not sure. Okay.
Well, your friends are weird because we're not going to say that 21 of us hairy-chested guys with gray hair are going to the ballet. I can tell you that much. A prayer meeting, we do pray for each other.
Right.
That is true. But
right.
We also talk cars and talk about our wives and our motorhomes and how we travel. We found out today that Ted, he flies a lot.
Yeah.
And Ted gets upgraded all the time. He knows all the people on the flights. He knows the
stewardesses?
I don't know if you're supposed to call them stewardesses anymore. Is that right?
Oh, man.
Well, what do you mean?
Flight attendants? I don't know what's the correct thing.
Oh,
I don't know. Nevertheless, it's...
I didn't know that stewardess was a derogatory term. Is
it? I don't know. I don't think it's derogatory.
Well, what is it? What are you supposed to call
them here?
What is this world coming to? Flight attendants and whatever. Okay. Yeah, okay.
Male or females that help you on the flight?
And then one of the other guys is a pilot, and he says, Ted says, sometimes they go out and then they have to come back in. And the pilot says, I like those. And he goes, why? And he goes, because we get paid for the whole trip if we go out to the runway and we come back. This is the kind of conversation we have.
Oh.
Everybody kind of talks about their job and all that kind of stuff. The guy that's a pilot talks about some of the funniest things that's ever happened on the airplane that he's been in charge of and all that kind of stuff. So it's everybody has something. Sitting next to me is a guy who owns a huge carpet and tile facility. Sitting next to him is Ted, who sells carpet by the millions of yards to casinos, the stuff that never wears out for, you know, 2 jillion years. Then you got Dave, who mm-hmm. sells paper clips and ink pens. Let me think. You got Joe, who does paint and body work. I don't know. There's other guys.
It's wide variety.
It's a wide variety of, but we learn from each other.
Yeah.
And then we usually go to barbecue, but I couldn't make it today because the prayer meeting took too long, so I couldn't make that in radio.
Too many coffees with whipped cream and unknown other liquid in it.
I'm telling you right now, everybody, Joe, who dispenses it,
is the dispenser.
it might be a thimbleful in a 24-ounce glass.
Well, that's no fun.
Yeah. Somebody needs to be the new dispenser.
He needs to make those things a little more arthritic.
Okay. Well, I know you don't get up early enough in the morning, but why don't you come by next Saturday?
What do you mean? What time is early?
7.
Oh, please.
He just got to tell us.
I take a nap.
He said he wakes up at 5.
He just said for the first time I woke up at
5. No.
I said I can't sleep in all of a sudden now. For years it's been, you know, I could sleep till noon, and now all of a sudden I'm up at 4:30 like bing. Like, I wake up and I don't know.
Well, let me ask you a question. After you wake up, what's the next thing you do?
Flip the TV on and make coffee.
Okay. Is there anything else you do immediately after you wake up?
After coffee, there is. But not, not
come on.
See, she gets it.
I know. I got it. I got it. I was
going in that direction.
I got it.
All right, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. In spite of what you're hearing, we're talking about cars. If you have a car question, we especially like the one that says, my wife says this and I say that. I think you're going to get a jury today. Because Alan and Andy and Mark, we'll vote on it, and obviously it's going to be 3-0, or it could be 1-2, but one way or another, you'll benefit from it. Andy typically sides with the lady. Alan hits a flip of a coin, and I'm just here to listen. So nevertheless, 602-508-0960. This is 960 The Patriot. We're on 960 on the AM dial if you got here by accident. And every Saturday between 10 and noon, we're here talking about cars. So you're welcome to join us. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we're here to help you. Andy Salem's sitting my right. Alan Salem is sitting across from me. There's three of us that probably have pretty close to 70 years of experience all together. And Andy has been on the front counter side, and so that means she gathers the symptoms and passes the technician. She also signs the paychecks and handles all the money because Alan's not allowed to. But together, the two of them run the entire shop, and it's Renee and I couldn't be happier or more satisfied with how they do that. Real quick, one of my best repair shops, there's only one in Mesa. I wish I had more, but I have a pretty tight filter. But Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is one of the shops. He's on Main Street just east of Stapley. The Thompson family has been in the auto repair business since the 70s. So Brian and Thelma have lots. Now, both of their parents and their families have been in the auto repair business and the gas station business for a very long time. But once you meet Brian and Thelma, you'll know why Mark Salem likes them so much. They are honest, dependable, they give great service, and every once in a while, like the good shops, they raise their hand and say to the customer, you need a fresh pair of eyes on this problem. So if you're in Mesa, Thompson's Auto Repair, Main Street, just east of Stapley. Jonathan, good morning. Jonathan? Jonathan?
I should be there.
Okay. Why don't we just put him on hold, Gil, and then we'll go to John. John, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, Mark.
How can we help you?
I was calling. I think this crew that you've got on today is perfect for my question. I wanted you guys' professional opinion. I went to get my oil change yesterday, and I noticed my wiper blade, you know, the rubber pieces just start coming apart with all this rain we've had and the heat. And so we get there, I get there, and the guy's trying to upsell me the whole time. I said, no, I just need conventional oil. And he's trying to sell me synthetic. And I said, no. And I said, I need some windshield wipers. So I walked around to a restaurant waiting for the oil change and everything to get done. And a few hours later, I come back and go to pick it up. And I've used this company before. It's a chain that's in the Southwest, but just not this location. And I trusted them, so I just got the invoice, signed it, and a couple blocks down the road, I get to a stoplight. I see the rubber, the blades weren't even changed, and I was so angry, Mark. Like you like to say, my panties got in a wad.
Oh.
And so I looked at the invoice while I was at the stoplight, and also they put semi-synthetic in there, and I never asked for that. And so I turned around, went back. And I said a few words I shouldn't have. And I asked, you know, I said, I want this thing on the lift. I want to make sure that's clean oil and a new filter. And put those wiper blades on like was promised and I paid for. And I just want to ask, in your experience, can you really screw up that badly with, will someone overcharge you on synthetic, semi-synthetic, and then the guy looking at the car and on the invoice was on the order saying new wiper blades and you know, they're sticking out, and it's totally, you can totally see them, and I just didn't know if that was...
Okay. I can answer your question.
You know what I mean? If it was on purpose? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't talk about them, but I can tell you our shops left the lug nuts loose on a BMW. Our shop put the wrong oil filter on an engine for a lady, and she leaked oil about halfway home. We could follow the trail of oil. We blew up her motor. Have you got any other stories for us?
I mean... We all make mistakes. We all have bad days. We all have communication issues. So, I don't think that that's a pass. It shouldn't have happened. I don't think it's acceptable. But, you know, you asked for wiper blades. You know, the service writer put him on the ticket. Maybe he didn't relay that to the technician, though you would think that if you have rubber pieces hanging all over, there would be some... you know, conversation back and forth, but
I got to think too that if they're gonna stiff you on something intentionally, which I'm not suggesting they did, it wouldn't be on a windshield wiper that's 18 inches in front of your face.
I'm not being rude.
I'm just saying, that would be really stupid on their part. Now, I will tell you this: if you came to our shop, we don't even have conventional on the property. We would have to actually go out and buy them in quartz because we don't even have semi-synthetic is the lowest grade that we have. But we would also let you know that up front. Hey, conventional's, you know, not really an option unless I send a guy out to get some. So, I really can't speak for the oil. I don't know, but it sure would have been a lot easier to just be honest up front and say, hey, we don't have that instead of, you know, secretly trying to put it in or something.
Well, let me ask you something, John. I think you said that you had patronized this shop before.
The chain he had, not the specific location.
Okay. You know, I'd give them, it's really how they handle it.
Yeah.
So if the manager, you say, first of all, you charged me for semi-sin and I didn't ask for, and then my wiper blades you charged me for and they look like heck. So he says, just give me a few minutes.
How did he handle it?
Yeah, good question.
How did he handle it?
he handled it very well, actually. I mean, he said, you know, it's unacceptable, and he said the next oil change is on him. But, I didn't deal with him the first time, but then he took care of it.
Sure.
Well, he went and found out where the bad communication is.
Yeah.
It's probably not his fault. It's probably between the service writer and the guy underneath. But those guys spend their time in the pit. So they think that the red Chevrolet truck's coming over the pit, and they look at the work order, and they do the wrong work order on the pickup truck. So in their defense, I agree with Andy. He cleaned it up. He said he was sorry, and he gave you a free oil change. We don't usually do that if we're trying to take you.
I think he made it. I think he made it right, which is, I think, you know, just admit they admitted fault. He made it right, so I think that says something about him. I think that it's probably a communication and, you know, just an off day. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt myself, but.
And think about, I'll give you an example for us in dealerships as well and other places. The service writer takes the information. He gives the symptoms to the tech. The tech then goes through and he says this is what it takes. The tech checks the parts for the prices, and he checks the labor, and then he goes to the service writer, and the service writer adds it all up, and then the service writer calls the customer. You can imagine somewhere along that line something could get messed up. And you can also see where the technician sees the wiper blades need to be done. He says to the service writer, overbid it by $12 so I can put a set of wiper blades on this. The service writer says, yeah, I got you covered, and we're done. I think a lot of us do just that because I copied it from other shops. Mm-hmm. So I think the consensus in the room is they handled it right. I don't know that there's warning flags. If he would have yelled at you and kicked you off the property, then he would have told you all you needed to know.
Yeah.
And so, all righty. Well, listen, John, thank you. Thank you very much. Now, Gil, did we get Jonathan back?
He's still on hold. You want to go to him?
Yeah, let's go to him. And, Gene, you stay right there. Jonathan, what can we do for you?
Well, I have a 2002 3/4-ton Dodge Laramie, and it's got the 5.9-liter diesel in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the transmission is, and that's where the problem lies. When I'm going about 50 miles an hour, it doesn't seem to want to shift into the next gear. It'll keep jumping back and forth until I accelerate beyond 50 miles an hour, and then it'll shift. And a friend of mine who is a mechanic for the company I work for, he was saying, well, have you changed the transmission fluid? I said, no, I haven't driven it over 1,000 miles since I've bought it. I don't use it every day. So he says, just change the transmission fluid, change the filter, and see if that does anything.
Okay.
Because he says, well, you know, go ahead.
How many miles?
96,000 now. It was 95 when I bought it.
Well,
I don't know what was done to it before I got it. So.
Okay.
I mean, I think that we would probably diagnose the issue first before just flushing it or servicing it, because sometimes if you service it and you have a problem, then it can make it worse. So you wouldn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So I would say go after your symptoms first before you do anything.
And go.
There's a couple things that come to mind. That's got a 48 RE in it. It's kind of a crap.
Wait a second. What do you mean a 48 RE in it?
Is that the
transmission?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
okay.
48 RE. It's kind of a crappy transmission, to be totally honest with you. It's not, I shouldn't say crappy, it's not great, especially stock. But two things come to mind. There's bands in the transmission that need to be adjusted.
Okay.
If those have never been done, that could be part of the issue. And that's something you can actually do yourself. It's not that difficult. The other thing is we have run into numerous times where the alternator causes interference with the torque converter, and you have to put an isolator. Now, again, it's more of a surge at higher speeds, but it can affect stuff down a little bit lower as well. There's an isolator that you put in. I want to say it's the power of the ground line of the alternator, and it takes care of that. Matter of fact, we do enough of them to where I actually keep one of those in stock because we do enough of them. Those are the two things that come to mind, but again, you know, I need to drive it in order to make a more accurate description.
There's a lot of things here, too. If he can manually shift it to see what's happening,
Yeah.
Okay, so we need to know if the problem translates to you manually shifting the transmission. Number two, I'm against you changing the fluid. I think that's okay. A bad idea. That, I don't know. Alan, of all the diesels you work on, how many times when you change the fluid in the filter does it fix his symptoms?
I'm not real clear on his symptoms, but it doesn't happen often.
And the, you know what it does? Is it 60 miles an hour, 70 miles an hour, all of a sudden it just kind of falls on its face because the filter's plugged. Now we have a substandard flow of fluid through the transmission. And so those are the kinds of symptoms. I agree with Alan. You got to drive it. Manually shift the thing and see what happens. Now, what could he do on the alternator? Couldn't we just pull the output on the back of the alternator and go drive it on the battery to see if there's a problem that that fixes? I'm just asking.
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I've never tried it that way.
Well, if you take the alternator out of the system, and if it is creating interference with the electronics, then if we take it out, it might fix the problem temporarily.
Yeah, I've never diagnosed it. It's real easy to diagnose once you have it here. It's a surge at higher speeds.
Okay.
What it's actually doing is how are we doing on time real quick?
We're all right. Go ahead.
Okay. Sorry, I can't see the clock. It kicks the converter in and out. Whoa, 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 as you're cruising down the road.
Okay, if he just gently applies the brake pedal, it takes the lockup right off. So he's driving down, he keeps his right foot on there, and with his left foot, he just, enough to shine the brake lights. If the goes away and he lets go of his brake pedal and it comes back, then it's a torque converter.
Yeah.
Because that's the only time.
It's the isolator, but yes. Okay. So it's...
The repair on the isolator, ballpark?
It's probably less than $150.
Okay. Yeah. Alrighty, well, listen, Jonathan, thank you very much. Good thing we had the diesel guy in here because I couldn't handle that by myself. Let's go to Gene. Gene, good morning. How can we help you?
Get a break.
Let me just talk to Gene for a second, and then we're going to take a break.
Sure thing.
Okay.
I've got a 2017 Toyota Tundra. Runs good, no problems. Got the 5.7 four-wheel drive in it. But it gets horrible gas mileage, and you know, which I think is indicative of about 12 miles to the gallon. Is there anything you can do to improve that other than trade it in for a diesel?
Okay, we're going to put you on hold. We're all laughing. We're going to put you on hold, and we'll be right back.
On it, honestly, and people say, "Well, won't that make it gas mileage worse?" It depends on how you drive. I mean, anytime you make a vehicle more efficient, it has more power to get up to speed. We generally see a slight increase in fuel economy with a supercharger as long as you're not driving like a, you know.
Like you and Dad.
Yeah, like we do. If you do, then it has a possibility of dropping to 20%, you know, almost instantly.
What's the cost of the blower?
Well, a lot. Well. You buy a lot of gas.
Okay, no. We're talking cents on the gallon here. Okay, so what's the super
financially,
cost?
This is totally not a smart decision.
Oh, absolutely. No question. But it makes a lot more fun to drive.
If you want to say that your truck is supercharged and you want to make it fun to drive, and hey, if you're going to get 12 miles to the gallon and you want to have fun driving it, then you could and spend some money.
Yeah. It's a big ticket
item.
It would
probably buy about 4,500 gallons of gas.
But it'd be a lot more fun to drive.
Yeah, no question.
And it's fun to drive a blown. We put a blower on a Camaro, a 2010 Camaro, and it turned it from a VW four-cylinder with air conditioning to a 747. It's just all the difference in the world. But I want to address it. First of all, 12 miles to gallon. Is it you? Is it possible that it's you?
No. I'm pretty light-footed. I don't punch it or nothing like that. So I try to actually just take off slow, you know, whatever, and keep the mileage as much as possible. So
okay.
That's the average, what it says on the dash computer.
Okay. I don't usually do that because I don't trust that information.
Yeah.
I usually do gallons based on my trip odometer. But my one-ton Dodge diesel pulls 15. But I'm also running from Payson to here back, and I probably 20% is in town and probably 80% is on the highway. If I'm hauling horses, I'm down in the 10 to 12. And we got some up and downs between here and Payson as well. I don't know that I'm real worried about your 12 miles to the gallon. I'm going to say something ridiculous. Why don't you duct tape a raw egg to the throttle, and if, in fact, you can drive it for a couple of days and not break the egg, or you can hard boil it, and if you break the shell. But the idea is put a hot cup of coffee between your legs and take the lid off of it and just drive it to make sure that you don't spill any. Those are the tricks. Maybe have your wife drive it and see if she can better your 12 miles to the gallon.
I think, too, manually calculate it, like he's talking about. Don't use what your display is showing. Actually manually calculate it for a while and see if that's any different.
We need to see something different, though, based on your driving. I know that mine is the same way. Mine won't show what I actually get. So if I'm doing miles per gallons, then I get a much better range, but I see a variation. If you're seeing 12, no matter whether your son's driving on a Friday night with his girlfriend or when you're out there drag racing, then 12 is probably not a good number.
Two things real quick go ahead.
I was going to say, what about like these performance chips or anything? No. Are they just a joke?
No, waste of money. On a gas motor, they're don't just save your money.
And really and truly, I'll tell you why we know that. It's because we've tried it.
Yeah.
And we own a lot of those that we're not going to sell because really and truly, they look cool with the sticker on the air filter that you've got some, you know, fancy-dancy programmer in there. But really and truly, we're finding customers aren't happy with them.
What were the other two?
Keep in mind, too, that I call it the Liometer, you know, the miles per gallon thing. You know, that's since the last time you've reset that. So if you haven't reset that thing for 24,000 miles, if you're getting better fuel economy, it's going to take a heck of a long time for that thing to raise back up. The other thing I was going to say is a lot of times people come to me with the same problem and they have larger or oversized wheels and tires. I don't know if you do or not, but keep in mind, if your speedometer is 20% off, you have to add 20% to that number. So people go, I'm getting 8.6 miles per gallon, but I've got, you know, I'm 30% off on my tires. Well, you got to add 30% to that 8.6. So those are just two things that I, you know, come around to my, you know, my day-to-day stuff.
And you can figure out you can get on the internet and figure out the diameter circumference of the tires that it came with and the diameter circumference of the tire you got, and that's going to give you a percentage, and you can change it appropriately. Anyway, thanks for holding as long as you did, Gene. Dan, you're up next. How can we help you?
Yes, sir. How are you doing today? Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 1984 Corvette, and pretty much I'm trying to do things on myself, you know, for cost effectiveness. Anyways, long story short, it gets to the point. It's leaking brake fluid out of the back reservoir, the one closest to the windshield, the master cylinder. And I had my wife pump it and to see where the leak's coming from so I can actually see the leak. And it's looking like it's, I'm not sure if it's dripping, but it's coming out of like the bottom of the master cylinder, like where there'd be no opening and stuff like that. So maybe it's leaking.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that basically it's not my booster that's leaking before I go put a master cylinder in.
No, there's no fluid in your booster, but it's sucking that fluid from the back of the master into the booster. So how long has this been going on?
It's been going on for roughly, like I said, two, 3 months to answer your question, but I drive the car like once a month.
Okay, well, this is, you got two choices. Yeah. A, you go get a master cylinder, you put in a device, get your wife out there with, you know, gloved hands, she holds her hands, and you gently pump it until you bleed it good. Then you hang it back on. That's option one.
Okay.
Option two is you get a master cylinder and booster together. That brake fluid will cause the brake booster to go bad. Then you're going to end up with a rock-hard pedal, and you're not going to be able to stop that without tremendous effort. So that's why I ask you how long it's going. But when you get the master off there, you can also look inside and maybe see something that's contaminated. But if you like your Corvette and you like to work on it, then I'd do a booster-master combination because that will be cheaper than them separately.
Okay? Okay, I definitely understand that.
Okay.
Okay, well, thanks for answering my question, and you have a great day, man.
You too.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Thank you very much. See, JW, I'm not going to be able to get you because I got to take a break in 40-some-odd seconds. So, JW, hang right there. You'll be my first caller. Now we have four lines open, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You got an old-time master technician. You got a young buck that works on all kinds of high-performance cars and diesels and as well as normal cars. And then we've got Andy, who's the front counter person, who actually interprets the questions she asks the customer and helps interpret that to the technician to make sure he understands all that. Then Andy also knows when we've done something wrong, where somehow or another we were working on symptom A when it was really B. So Andy has both sides of the customer contact as well as being able to talk to the technician, and typically they're not going to be able to snow her with fancy words because she's been around too long. 602-508-0960.
They've been around since 19... 19-
Welcome back, everybody. Let me turn on everybody's microphones. My name is Mark Salem, Alan Salem sitting here, Andy Salem, and we all have different skill levels, and certainly they have a little bit more than me with respect to business and car repair on the newer model cars, but we're going to go to JW first. JW, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Well, I thought I'd throw out some anecdotal stuff about the shop problems. The guy John earlier?
Yes.
Who's having... I'm not going to name the shop, but it's in Tempe. They dropped three different drain plugs out of cars that they sent out of their shop.
Yeah.
One of them was trying to go to California. I picked him up on the far side of the I-10 tunnel.
Yeah, he made it a long way.
he was lucky that his drain plug is a big one in a Honda. It bounced around under the car and made him, you know, catch attention. What's going on? Another one, a big Ford SUV, drove dry. And this is all the same shop within a month.
Okay.
Wow.
I can't defend them, but let me tell you what I'm thinking out loud. First of all, sooner or later, the dash is going to light up like a Christmas tree. And most of the time, you can throw it into neutral, coast off the side of the road, and save the motor. Most of the time. Number two, all of us have had that problem. I don't know about three in a month or three in a year, all that kind of stuff. But the technician, he's doing the oil change. He screwed the plug in with his fingers. And then all of a sudden parts calls him and tells him his water pump's there. So he goes and gets a water pump. He comes back. He forgets where he's at. I'm not making excuses, but let me... If the shop refuses to take care of your car, you report it to your insurance company. Your insurance company will take care of your car. Then they'll subrogate. They'll go back after the shop. So that's the path of least resistance. Plus, it doesn't really apply to your record because this is not a chargeable problem. So, and even to some extent, I had a guy in a diesel motor not too long ago that was power washing his diesel with the air duct off and the motor running. So when he sprayed the mouth of the diesel, it bent a bunch of valves. So he reported it to his insurance company, and they said, yeah. And I said, how can you put a new engine in this? I'm not going to tell you the insurance company, but this is the answer. We insure stupid. He says we insure people for making mistakes and collisions. He says, but we insure stupid. So he says this is something that we cover. So I can't really address it.
Yeah, hopefully that shop has addressed it, or I'm sure if they bought three motors in a month that some changes have been made, or let's hope.
Yeah. And Andy's right. That's exactly right.
Buy one, and that's not good news, so let alone three.
And I've already admitted that we've done that same thing.
Yeah.
We've done that same thing. You know, not too long ago when we had those, we had a parts guy come out, and he had two filters, and they were both Toyotas. He put the A in the B car and the B in the A car. So one of them didn't work, and the lady was elderly. I wanted to buy the car and put a motor in it, but it had sentimental value to her, so we put a motor in it. But everybody has that problem, but we have no explanation for three in a short period of time. JW, thank you very much for calling. We appreciate it. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. it's not a really good idea to take your diesel truck to somebody who doesn't talk about them being good with diesel trucks. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a Better Business Bureau A-plus shop. They're diehard diesel service and repair. They do foreign and domestic light trucks. They're at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate is the owner. Nate's been on the show. Nate's very good at what he does, but again, he's at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak up north. If you're going to have an oil change on your truck, you can have that done anywhere you want. But if you've got a drivability problem, or you've got some suspension problem, or you've got an oil leak, they are slightly different. It's as different as a dog and a cat in the sense that they both have oil, or they both have blood, they both have four paws, and they both got ears, but that's about it. So it's important with your diesel. Like I said, maintenance can be anywhere, but if you've got a problem with it, you should go to somebody who knows diesel. And again, Strictly Diesel, Pinnacle Peak, and I-17, they do domestic light trucks, both foreign and domestic. We'll be right back. Back here, everybody. So it's 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're going to go to Bob before we do anything else. Bob, thanks for holding through the break. How can we help you?
Well, Mark, hey, I got my wife's got this 14 Nissan Pathfinder, and every time I take this thing out by myself, it never fails. I get lost, and it's a Pathfinder. So I took it to the dealer. Tell me what you think, because I know you've been in the business. I took it to the dealer, and you know, I pulled up my ball peen hammer and rapped on the counter a few times to get his attention, but the place was busy. But, you know, he was cordial. And he came over and I explained it to him. And, you know, that I was getting lost all the time. Every time, it's about a half hour after I'm driving, I'm lost. And so he said to leave it with him for about a half hour. And I came back. You know, I said, what's the diagnosis? And I don't know if he was messing with me or not, but he says he thinks it's the loose nut behind the wheel. Is that really possible?
Well, I don't know if you're pulling my leg or what. We've seen cars where the loose nut behind the wheel is the cause of the problem. I saw a big hairy-chested guy last year that came in that was going through rear brakes.
That's
like
me.
Crazy.
That sounds like me.
Okay. And the parking brake was on, and all the parking brake hardware was melted and all that other kind of stuff. So, but I know you're pulling my leg because he's using the Pathfinder two or three times, and he's getting lost. Well, let me just make you feel better. I get lost as I get older, okay? Sometimes I walk outside without my car keys, and sometimes I want to go to Lowe's, and I can't remember whether to turn left or right at Durango Street and all that kind of stuff. So if that makes you feel any better, then – but as far – I thought his navigation system was broken. And I don't know the answer to your question, Bob. I'm going to lift up my pants legs and say thank you very much for calling and goodbye. But I don't have an answer. Either one of you want to chime in?
I have no idea what's going on, to be honest with you.
I've lost myself.
Yeah. I'm as lost as this guy is. I have no idea what's going on right now.
All right, the key here is he said Pathfinder two or three times. Then he says he gets lost. And then he says the service manager takes her for a 10-minute drive. Then he comes back and the service manager says it's the nut behind the wheel.
Yeah, I get all that.
So it's... Bob is pulling on our proverbial leg, I'm quite sure. But if it isn't, we already dumped him, so we can't. You have to follow something. That's a call that I get once a year. Once a year, somebody will say, my car barks. And it's usually a friend of mine. It's usually somebody I know. Then they'll call up and tell me that their car is barking and their wife is meowing.
So it was a joke.
We know who the dense is here. Andy and I.
It was a joke?
He was really prepping for that real call.
No.
I wish we could just tell some of our customers that it's the loose nut behind the wheel. I'm just kidding.
I'm confused.
You know,
do we have any more callers?
No, but I got to finish up real quick. Blackwell Automotive, who belongs in this conversation if that wasn't him there? Tom and I are friends. He's at 40th Street in Greenway. He takes care of that whole northeast Scottsdale area for me. He's really good at what he does. But a good shop is this. They'll tell you, we're not the best person of the shop for your problem, but you need to go talk to so-and-so. That happens. Not too long ago, we had, what was that little BMW that was throwing alternator belts? What was that?
A Mini Cooper.
And we worked on it three times. And we just couldn't figure it out. And so we sent it over to a BMW shop, Beyer Motor Works, down in Chandler. It was a $1,700 bill. This had a fancy-dancy alternator that would electronically come on and go off. And every time the alternator went to full power, it'd blow the belt off of it. We didn't know that. We've never seen an alternator that was computer-controlled. We never seen an alternator that coasts sometimes and char. But anyway, they fixed it. We didn't. We gave the lady, I don't know, $500 credit towards her $1,700 repair to reimburse her for a lot of the work that we did that didn't benefit her. But, yeah, it's a difficult thing. Blackwell Automotive's a good guy. He's really smart. 40th Street and Greenway, and you can't go wrong if you go up there. And we have another caller. Who might that be?
That would be Tom.
Tom, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning. Hey, 02 Windstar. I've had four or five Windstars. I really like them. But every one of them that has power doors, those doors go goofy, and sometimes you got to turn off, close them manually, and other times you got to, if they work when you start the car and or put it in gear. What's going on with that?
So you're saying that when you put it in gear, it doesn't lock sometimes, and sometimes it does?
No, they will close. I'm talking the electric sliding doors.
Oh, okay.
They'll just click. Sometimes they'll just click when you're, in park or not on, and so
okay.
Start the car, and then it'll do it. Is there some particular relay or something?
Well, I mean, all that has to be tested, but the clicking noise indicates that something's connected to the switch, and if there's a relay, it's trying to close the relay to power up the motor to open up the door. So, yes, the first thing I think I would do is pull a schematic on it, see what fuse is running that circuit, see where the motor is. But is the click coming from the door? Is it coming from the B-pillar, which is where the door shuts?
From the door. It's
okay.
From the door when I'm trying to close it. Okay.
All right, I want you to try this. This is silly, but it works on Fords. Okay, I'll tell you the story. We're having lunch up in Payson, and one of the guys is got a Ford in the window. The passenger window works sometimes and sometimes not. And so as a joke, I say to him, I can fix it. Give me $1. I can fix it. Everybody's laughing at me and all kinds of stuff. And they go, you've lost your mind and stuff. We walk outside. I tell Daryl to get into the driver, start the car up, and I want him to hold the window in the down position. Actually, it was the other way around. The window was stuck open. I says, hold it up in the up position. I walked over to the passenger door, and I went, and I hit it, not enough to damage it, but enough to jar it, and the window went up. And I said, the motor's bad. The brushes and the motor's bad. I want you to do the same thing. When it clicks, then you hold it in the position. Have somebody, don't hold it there for an hour. Have somebody go around and thump the outside of the door. Now, the end of the story is this. We have breakfast every Tuesday. So fast forward a month later, Daryl, there's two Daryls in the group. Daryl number one says, I fixed another guy's car that way, and he says, everybody was amazed. I said, I told you you owe me $1 every time you use it. Since then, Gordy calls me, and he's up on his motorhome on a trip, and he says his cruise control doesn't work, and he says, I know what you're going to say, pound on the steering wheel. And I said, yeah, I am. So he calls me back, and he goes, here, Nancy wants to talk to you. I said, what's up, Nancy? She says, you fixed it. And I says, why couldn't Gordy tell me that? And he goes, because he's too embarrassed, and he doesn't want to pay you the dollar. So I want you to try that. But to be honest with you, this isn't going to be rocket science on the 1 to 10 scale. This is the 3 for a good seasoned technician with hair on his chest and no earrings on. And this is going to be somewhat easy. But I think it's either a relay or a blower motor. That's what I think it is.
Not blower.
Okay. Is there a motor in the door on those sliding passenger doors?
I don't know that. That's why I asked you where the click was coming from. I don't know that, but it wouldn't be hard to figure out. Go to Rock Auto and look at a sliding door window motor, and it'll show you where the position, whether it's inside. And it'll also tell you, is it towards the bottom of the door, the upper door, the right or the left, and you'll know where to swack the door. Okay?
All right. I'll give it a whack.
Okay.
Thank
and now,
you.
Hey, if it works, you owe me a dollar.
I do. Okay. But why would it work when the car started and not when it's
voltage?
Yeah, it could very well be, because when you're dead.
We'll try it.
Okay, good luck. Thank you very much, Tom. Thank you. I make a lot of money with that. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It works.
I thought he said
good.
The door wouldn't open and shut. He was talking. He said the window?
No, the door. He said door.
But it's the same premise.
Oh, gotcha.
There's a motor that opens the door.
Sure.
There's a motor that opens the door.
Okay.
We got the call.
I know. Yeah. All that we do is reverse the polarity. Power and ground, then we go ground to power.
That would just indicate a bad motor.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm ready. Who's next?
That would be Jack.
Jack, good morning. We'll help you.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, and all of us are really good.
Good. So my daughter's car is a 2002 Corolla, and a little while ago the bearings seized up on the crankcase.
Okay.
And one of the rod bearings, I mean.
Okay.
And so I'm wondering the transmission is starting to go goofy too. The rest of the car is in great shape, except for the engine and the transmission. I mean, that sounds kind of like an oxymoron.
No, that's okay.
But I'm wondering, does it make any sense at all to put a rebuild engine and transmission in it, keep it going? And what would that cost?
How many miles are on it?
280,000.
Okay. What are you going to do if you don't fix this? Are you going to take her out and buy a new car?
Yeah, I'll probably go get her another used car somewhere.
Okay. I got a couple thoughts. Sales tax and license on any kind of a car that you buy in that environment would probably pay for the motor. There's not going to be much savings, if any savings, if we're going to do a motor. There will be a savings because I think that Corolla is a front-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Okay. There's going to be some savings if you did both of them. Yes, the rebuilt motors that we buy, which are Jasper motors, they're good motors. We're not having any problem with them. We would send it out to a local rebuilder and have him rebuild the transmission, and he's one of the best that we've ever had in our lives. So, yes, this could be done. You could do them both together. There is a duplication of labor separating the engine and the transmission. I was going to say let's do the engine and wait on the transmission, but I've changed my mind. I think you should do both of them together. And how much would that cost, Alan or Andy?
This would I'm going to have to – yes, I mean, we can certainly do that, but it's going to far exceed the value of the vehicle.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
If you were in our shop, I can promise you the advice you would get from Andy and I would be – This is not a good investment. I mean, you're probably going to be six to nine grand to do both of them.
And I'll go with you on that.
I would say if it had lower mileage, maybe. If it had 100 to 150,000 miles, maybe. But I mean, you still got so many things besides the engine and transmission at 258,000
miles.
That's
over 10 times around the girth of the earth.
Yeah. Okay, Mark. If you put 6 to 8,000 or 9,000 or whatever Alan said in it, I mean, if the AC goes out next summer, it's going to be another 1,000. And
well, next thing you know, you're driving a Corolla you've got 12.5 into that's worth, $1,800.
Yeah.
Okay. The other side of that same coin is you take that $8,000, mm-hmm. okay? Let's divide it by years of service. So if he gets another 10 years of service, then we take that money, divide it by 10 years times 12 months is 120 months. So the real thing is if you do the math, the question then becomes, if this thing is $2 a month or $10 a month or $20 a month, that's okay. Air conditioning is air conditioning.
If he can go that amount of time without additional repairs.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you got to add additional repairs to that.
I mean, we too say if you buy a used car, and you don't have the maintenance records, you're buying somebody else's kind of unknown. So you just got to do your due diligence there.
And not only that is if you're going to buy somebody used, spend the money, $100 for a used car checkover?
Yeah, $100, $150.
Okay, and have them tell you what's okay now, what needs to be done now, what needs to be done in the future, and give you prices and all that. That gives you negotiation postures as we go. Mark at MarkSalem.com is my email address, Mark at MarkSalem.com. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Alan, for spending your Saturday with me. And until then, drive safely, and if somebody does something nice for you, stick your arm out the window and say thank you. That's the way to have a happy day.